Welcome to SaaS Open Mic by Chart Mogul. I'm Ed Shelley. As a consumer, an increasing proportion of my digital life can be attributed to subscriptions. Photo editing, movie watching, music listening, ebook reading, blog hosting, and plenty more. But what about subscriptions for physical products? We see food boxes, cosmetic boxes, gym membership, all taking the same form. But what if I were to rent my next big technology purchase instead of buying it outright? This is the realm of the Berlin-based Grover. There's a big overlap between financing a big purchase and renting it. Both help you spread the cost of such a spend. But the team at Grover wants us to have a flexible way in which we can rent technology and hardware products for as long as we want and give them back when we're done. As you can imagine, there's a lot of complexity around growing and starting a business based around hardware subscriptions like Grover. Some of that is shared with SaaS and software subscriptions, but there's also a big part that's unique to hardware-based subscriptions, things like inventory management and finance. So without further ado, here's my chat with Tom Cummings, CMO of Grover, and Michael Casal, founder and CEO of Grover. Oh, just one other thing. If you like SaaS Open Mic and you listen every week and you like the interviews we publish, I'd really appreciate if you could subscribe on iTunes or SoundCloud and leave us a review if you're using iTunes. It would really help us get the word out and spread the podcast to more people. Thanks. So Michael and Tom, thanks so much for inviting me to your office here. It's great to come and chat, and it's really interesting for me to look at Grover as a product, just because it seems like something that kind of encompasses a lot of what is happening in the kind of subscription economy right now, and on the consumer side, it seems interesting to me. So what? Let's start right at the beginning. If you can describe what Grover is, that would be probably a good place to start.
Sure. So Grover is a subscription service for physical goods, if you want, right? So we're really enabling rentals at the point of sale and really adding a subscription instead of a long-term financing to everyday tech gadgets, if you will.
Mm. And so in reality, that means that the users can go to your site and rent, or would you use the word rent in your case? Or?
Well, I think the word rent really is the most specific or more the easiest one to understand, because if you pay for usage, you're renting your Airbnb, you're renting actually your music on Spotify, and maybe you're also effectively renting the movies you watch on Netflix, because you either purchase to own or you pay for access. And every time we pay for access and usage, the word we're currently having is only renting, right? Mm-hmm. That's one thing. Other thing is obviously that the word renting has had a long history.
Yeah.
Whether you're renting your apartment, which is kind of neutral, but the moment it kind of goes in other verticals and other areas, it becomes to have kind of a connotation, which obviously we think is not the relevant one in particular for us.
Mm. So it's funny, because I don't think users of Spotify really think about renting their music. It's not something that comes to mind. But
exactly.
Maybe that's just like a mental...
Exactly. And there, we have a new word there, right? We call it streaming.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. So and you
can't stream hardware, right?
Well, why not?
Yeah. Okay, so what's the problem that Grover is actually solving for users?
Yeah, so Grover is solving two problems. Number one, we're removing the requirement, as financing does, we're removing the requirement of paying the full purchase price upfront. So we're solving the financing question and delaying cash flows over time. But the most important part here is that we're actually solving also the commitment issue. So we're also removing the standard requirement of making a decision whether or not somebody wants to be bound to a certain product for a specific period of time in order to accomplish the payments to kind of reach the purchase price or not, et cetera, right? So we're just introducing flexibility and freedom in this cycle by introducing a third option, which actually allows you to both delay the financing part, spreading the payments in a way, and in addition also delays the decision whether or not this is going to be the product or not. So adding, really removing the commitment period from standard financing is what we were set out to do.
Tom, I'd love to ask you a bit about the marketing side, because as CMO here, I guess you probably have the best overview of that. How do you approach marketing a product like Grover to consumers? Like, this is like quite a big shift in the kind of usage model for these kind of products. So does that like present some barriers when it comes to marketing the product?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a big challenge for us to sort of convert people from this model that they're used to from hundreds of years of commerce, of purchasing something if you want to have access to it, to educate them that there is now an alternative way, that you don't need to pay for something up front, that you can actually just get it, try it, and you can do that on a flexible monthly subscription basis. So educating people into what we do and really reinforcing the fact that it's really about sort of trial at the first stage. So, you know, if you're interested in what a drone is like to use, you don't want to spend €1,500 up front to just have a try of a drone, but $100 a month suddenly becomes a lot more of a reasonable proposition. So there's an educational aspect in there, and then there's also an experiential aspect. So attached to every product that you can rent, there's an experience behind it. So what are you actually doing with that drone? What are you doing with the GoPro camera? What are you doing with your MacBook? And we want to be able to tell stories around the things that people can do with those products and get them a little bit thinking less about, do I want this product? And more thinking, what is the experience that I can have when I'm enabled through this technology?
Cool. Yeah, there's so much to think about there on the marketing side, I feel like.
It's fun. I mean, we were doing a video shoot recently for drones. So we went out to Teufelsberg, this iconic site in Berlin. And it's a great place to take a drone because you can really shoot some amazing footage, but also show the different ways in which you can use the product. So that kind of fits into both the educational aspect and the experiential aspect.
Cool. What are the events that led up to the founding of Grover, and has the vision since then like changed at all? Where is the product or the service at in its kind of life cycle right now?
Sure. So there was a particular event actually that led to the founding of Grover, which is my movement from London to Berlin. And for actually the first time of my life, I needed to furnish an apartment. For an apartment that I actually wanted only to keep for 12 months, because that was the time I intended to spend really in the city. And there was no alternative option to purchasing and spending €3,000, at IKEA for all that furniture, or to commit for a period of time, which is way beyond my intended usage time of that particular item list. So I thought, wow, that's really inconvenient. Now I need to choose between two options, which I don't like either of. And why couldn't there be an option which makes it very flexible for me to have a particular product and to separate the payment from it? So today it's a green lamp and tomorrow it's a red lamp, but I could pay $20 per month for each of those. Why can't I not exchange it? Why do I need to just fix it and pay forever, right? So when I then started looking at it, it really seemed like a bad habit, because the products are real assets that you can really detach the kind of the cash flow and the payments from the person and really put it instead of a asset amortization, and by doing so you can introduce really flexibility for the people and with that also freedom. Now the evolution of Grover has been actually quite interesting, because when we launched in June 2015, the name was Bye Bye.
Okay.
By then, so it was say goodbye to buying.
Okay, so it's like buy.
Buy, okay. Yeah, exactly. So that was one of the reasons it led to kind of an evolution to a broader brand name. It's not only spelling, but we launched very aggressively in terms of a story, right? We said, say goodbye to buying, and are you still buying electronic devices? And, you know, let's attack, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was super fun. Obviously, we had the super funny videos, if you see on our YouTube channel, with a yellow head and the core scene was like these anonymous videos, right? But with a yellow head, with this bye-bye person. So that's kind of the launch character, right? Really,
okay.
The Robin Hood for people in the kind of in the consumption way. And then over time, it evolved a bit now to be a more encompassing story and more positively oriented, not this launch character anymore. So that's kind of the evolution that Grover took. Over time, within the past 18 months.
Cool. Do you think the whole messaging... So there's a lot of discussion recently around... I've heard people say, oh, you know, in a few years, we're not going to buy anything anymore. Everything is going to be rented. My parents joke at it because in their generation, it seems kind of ridiculous. Do you think there's a limit to where you can apply a subscription model?
Well, I think there are two things. Number one is the subscription model, whether you rent this particular good or not. For example, you could have a food subscription, right? Every weekend you get a new pack of chocolate. That's one thing. So you can apply a subscription to usable goods as well. That's one thing. The other thing is obviously on the rental side, I think the core theme is moving clearly in the fact that we're going to pay for usage, period. And the reason being is that variety is high. The time per asset or the time for a particular usage is unknown. People value optionality and value flexibility and want to have that. So everything that is not, you know, really addressing these core needs, meanwhile, which is flexibility and optionality and, you know, not committing, etc., is kind of a thing of the past. And buying things that you can actually pay per use, it's certainly one of those. And one core factor in that is that more and more of that, of these items that we use to kind of purchase, transform more in a service area, right? So it's not so much the shell of the physical MacBook. It's really how fast can you be with this, right? It's the software.
Yeah.
It's not, we see that moving in other directions. It's not the fridge, it's the refrigeration. It's not the printer, it's how many pages can you print, right? Mm-hmm. So we see really moving all sorts of areas into from a physical, it's about the asset, to a more intangible, service-oriented, what is it inside the asset and what do I get out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And for a moving society or for a moving economy where services are increasing and technology is improving and making people faster and more productive, this is definitely something that you want to be part of, and you cannot be part of by always buying kind of the historical asset and then sitting on it for a couple of years.
Yeah, makes sense. One of the key kind of factors that we kind of promote about subscription products is that everything suddenly becomes much more measurable when you have like a recurring revenue-based model. So I was wondering, perhaps Tom, if you could explain a little bit what kind of metrics you use here, and like how do you measure the success of the product, and how do you like understand how the users are kind of consuming the products?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of the interesting things about applying a subscription model to these products, where, you know, traditionally, if you go out and buy, you know, a camera or a MacBook or whatever tech product it is, after that initial transaction, there's no way of measuring how much value you get from the service. If I'm Sony and I make a new PlayStation, how do I know how much people are using it after that purchase, or whether it just sits on a shelf being underutilized? And by applying the subscription model, where people can cancel at any point, we suddenly start to learn all of this usage behavioral aspects of how interesting are certain products, what is the kind of lifespan of a product. So the metrics that we look at on a product basis would be sort of average rental times, We look at demand that we see. We look at sort of pricing functionalities. How can we vary our pricing model based on those demand aspects, based on the cost aspects, based on various different usage habits of the product itself. On a customer level, you know, we have traditional SaaS metrics where we look at average revenue per user per month, monthly churn and win backs rates. We look at customer lifetime value, measure that against the initial marketing acquisition cost. So on a customer level, it's actually quite similar to SaaS products, but then we get all of these additional product related pieces of information.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of the things you measure here are kind of on an individual product level, because I'd imagine that the lifetime of, say, a rental of a drone is maybe like very different to a laptop or something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We see these sort of reflect our different use cases that we have. So there's many reasons why people might want to rent something instead of purchase it. It might be you want to just play with the newest piece of technology that comes out. So a drone, something that will probably have, you know, a 2-3 month average lifetime, average rental length. Whereas, as you say, a laptop, maybe the use case of the laptop is the entrepreneur who doesn't want to spend all of the money to buy the laptop up front, but they want to spread their payments out over a monthly basis. And then we see sort of 9, 10, 11 months average rentals on those kind of products. So we've got quite a lot of diversity within the product base as well.
Mm. How do you approach like pricing these services when you the like estimated lifetime of the user, I guess, is quite difficult to calculate or to project?
Yeah, this is an interesting topic because, you know, there's not really any precedent per se.
Yeah.
And you talk about other subscription services like a Spotify or a SoundCloud or a Netflix where the pricing model changes so dramatically when you're moving from a physical good to a digital good. For us, there are some base things that we use in our pricing model. So understanding, you know, the original purchase price of an asset, for example, and then how well it retains its value over time. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a high-end digital camera might retain 95% of its value 3 years down the line, whereas the latest Android phone probably loses most of its value within 6 to 9 months. Mm. So we price to incorporate those dynamics as well. But then we're also looking at, you know, what's the customer willing to pay? Mm-hmm. What kind of products can we bring to market at an interesting price point? So when there's new technologies coming to market, we want to work with brands, and we work with, you know, a couple of leading brands to help them bring their products to market, and that therefore we're able to find more flexibility in the pricing to match a little bit what is the customer willingness to pay here.
Mm.
So because we're a completely different take on how to access these products, we also have a lot of flexibility in terms of pricing. And I think as we expand our product range, as we expand our customer base, and even when we go to different geographies, we'll see quite a lot of variety in how we choose to price things based on the learnings that we get. And it's also because these products tend to have life cycles that can be 12, 18, 24 months, those learnings, we're going to generate a lot of useful data over time, which we can incorporate into our pricing model later.
Mm. Yeah. What are some of the complexities that you have over something like a software as a service model? Because I can think of one, which is obviously like inventory management. Are these things that you guys feel like you've solved, or does it kind of increase the complexity a lot when you have to deal with hardware, for example?
Well, there's certainly a kind of hybrid element where you do have these subscriptions. So it looks like on the one side, really like a SaaS business because you offer subscriptions and people come back, etc. On the other hand, you really have a kind of almost like a finance business because you invest first. You give out a principal, but in the form of a physical item. And then you need to manage that turnaround in order to make that a sustainable enterprise. And as a third component now even, you want to make sure that your inventory is efficient and circulating and that your operations are good, et cetera, et cetera. So I think definitely there are these two areas, which is finance and operations, if you will, which add complexity towards, or as compared to a standard, you know, SaaS company or business model, where you just build a product and a bunch of guys and girls subscribe to it. And so it does have a more case by case granular approach, if you will. But on the other hand, I think the good thing is that we're actually not in a position to need to push a new, just another SaaS product in the market and say, hey, this is a subscription you need.
Yeah.
Right. Now I'm going to take care of all your apps for $9 per month or something like that. Right. Mm. But it's actually, hey, you have a particular need and desire.
Yeah.
Right. And here we're giving our best to make it happen in a flexible way. Right.
Yeah.
As an alternative to this debt and credit world. Yeah.
Right. So the value is kind of much closer to the surface.
Yes, yes. We're very close to the customer need, right? So we don't need to push a SaaS product where people need to find out why would they need it. It's really just saying, hey, we're giving our best to make that a sustainable endeavor, and then this is what we want to charge per month in order to accomplish that.
Yeah, okay. So you're launched here in Berlin and in some other cities as well, right?
Sure. So the launch was in Berlin.
Okay.
And simultaneously, we also launched in the UK. So out of Berlin, we really can take care of a very nice shipping area. Just because so long as the language is the same in the EU, you can basically ship and do business all across the European Union, right? Mm. Mm-hmm. So we launched in Germany, number one. UK, we delivered also. At the beginning, in particular, we were looking at the UK market, and then in July in 2016, we launched our first US market, which is New York.
Was Berlin like an obvious place for you to launch? And how's your experience been like growing the company from here?
Sure. So I'm actually a Berliner.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm from Berlin, but I was away for 10 years studying and working everywhere else. So coming back to Berlin, where also my family lives, you know, was really a natural choice to be a place. So if you're in Germany, for me, it's Berlin in any case. Mm. And the good thing is that we actually have a very vibrant startup scene here now. So even if, you know, I wouldn't launch a startup in Munich, I think, or in Hamburg, I think Berlin is a great place. There are many other entrepreneurs here, lots of meetups, lots of other places where people can discuss and interact. So it's super vibrant.
Do you see, like, how is the kind of hiring scene here? I've heard things lately that it's very hard to get the right talent quickly enough to grow. Would you agree with that, or what's your experience there?
I think there's a lot of great talent in Berlin, frankly, and it's growing more and more. Like, when I moved to Berlin in 2010, there wasn't nearly as sort of a rich and vibrant expat scene as there is today. There wasn't as much of a tech scene, and it's growing year by year. So I think, yes, it can be hard for certain roles to find particularly experienced talent, people who've done it before. We don't have the depth of something like Silicon Valley, but it's coming, it's growing, and I think it's because of that, it's a great place to build a business.
Yeah,
it's an advantage. Because people come prepared and learned, and they know what they're doing, basically. And you have a bunch. So I think competition is good, and you have all the human kind of the pool where smart people want to come to Berlin and do things, and then they go about maybe different startups. And for us as a company, it's really important to select people that identify with what we're doing, whilst being the best in what they do, right? So I guess you do have a couple of people that do startup hopping, and we want to make an effort to identify these people very early on and say, well, no, we have a shared mission and everybody's working on that because we believe in it. We have a purpose, and that's also kind of one of the factors that if you identify great people pre-trained elsewhere that really want to be part of this, then actually very advantageous to be in Berlin.
I guess I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I wanted to ask, kind of looking forwards, what does the future look like for you guys? Obviously, there may be things that you can't discuss, but you've launched the product and you started with kind of consumer tech, like drones, mobile phones, laptops. Do you plan to like roll this out to a much wider like set of products, or like what's the vision for Grover moving forward?
Sure, I think look, both Tom and I can answer that question without sharing too much. But I think we both agree that Grover is a fintech, and we are we come into play at a point in time in the consumer life cycle when it's about spending money, if you will, right? It's about, or in our case, it's about not spending that money and not committing, right? So we're kind of an alternative to a financing decision,
yeah.
Which means that we are kind of in this big circle of fintech, which means that in a way, we're having a good entry point, if you will, to offer services in that particular area. Now, whether this is expanding across other verticals, whether it is expanding across corporations and partnerships, et cetera, but the circle and the area that we play with, I think is very comparable to a fintech that wants to that wants to serve its customers at its best and provide as much combined value as possible.
Mm. Yeah, what I'd add to that is when we think about the customer life cycle and the customer journey, where are people making these spending decisions? You know, we know that that's not always going to be directly with Grover in mind right now. So we're focusing a lot on how do we expand through partnerships, our visibility and our distribution. So we work with retailer partners who can embed our Rent with Grover button, which provides an additional sort of checkout option at point of sale. So customers can basically be on a retailer website, click Rent with Grover, they go through our checkout process, and then we have acquired a new customer that way, and the retailer has increased their conversion rates.
Right.
So that's something interesting we see about thinking through the customer journey, you know, end to end. We've done offline partnerships on that side as well, so people can go into stores and pick up products and walk away with them on a rental model.
Mm.
And from a product perspective, it's thinking through, you know, where is there a demand? I think we will go to the places where there is demand for products, where it makes sense for from a subscription perspective, and help people to access things that they wouldn't otherwise necessarily be able to access.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. There's loads of really cool stuff here that I think we could talk about, but I don't want to take any more of your time. Is there anything that you guys would like to share? If you're hiring or looking for specific people, feel free to quickly pitch that.
I think we're always hiring, always looking for good and smart people to join the team.
Always.
You go to getgrover.com/jobs and find our latest.
Just reach out to Tom or myself.
Cool. We can put the details in the text for this. Yeah.
Yeah. In particular, actually, we're looking for someone to join the team to manage all of our subscriptions. So from a marketing and sort of strategy perspective, having full responsibility for managing the customer life cycle after that initial transaction. That's a role we're looking for now. So maybe something interesting for your audience.
Cool. Yeah, that's great. I have one more really quick fire question. What if you could rent absolutely any hardware product or offer it on Grover, like anything in the world, what would it be?
For me, it would be a robot. I mean, like an AI robot, one of these,
like an assistant kind of robot.
Yeah, like a dude walking around serving stuff and being programmed by AI for $29.90 per month.
Yeah,
I'll take that.
Yeah, that's pretty compelling. Value proposition. Cool.
I'm really getting into the world of VR at the moment. I'm really excited about that as a technology.
Yeah.
We have a couple on the store already, but I think there's going to be really good devices coming to market this year, and I will try and check out each and every one of them.
Yeah, That's great. Okay, well, Tom, Michael, thank you so much for chatting. It's been a bit fun, and hope to see you again soon sometime.
Pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
Pleasure.